Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. We're broadcasting to you live today from the Herbert W. Armstrong College campus here in Edmond, Oklahoma. It's a beautiful day outside. We haven't really been hit too bad by the winter freeze yet. It seems like we're all just enjoying this wonderful weather. I just want to mention real quickly here at the beginning, we were supposed to have an interview with Mr. Dennis Leap, who wrote Volume 13 of The Bible Story, but that has been postponed until next week. Do you want to become a better person? Would you like to find meaning and purpose in your career? Have you ever wished you could grab and hold on to the attention of any audience? Are you seeking motivation and inspiration from daily life? You probably answered yes to every question I just asked. These subjects and much more are expounded upon in chapters 3 through 5 of the autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong. This is a book that you can find for free at thetrumpet.com. You can order your own free copy, or you can just download it right there and read it. This manual is a precious instruction guide for how to be a minister. And even for those of us who won't be ministers in this life, we still have opportunities to teach in our families, in our friendships, in our jobs, teaching through our words, through our examples. Everything in this book can be applied to every person who reads it. This book is full of wisdom from the life of a man who lived to 93 years of age and who presided over the most massive and miraculous growth of God's work in all of history. So just getting back into the story flow here, Mr. Armstrong is returning from Mississippi, going back home to Iowa, and he's seeking more career advice from his Uncle Frank. His uncle advised him to go to the Merchants Trade Journal, where there were two men, Mr. Miles and Mr. Borman, who would be able to offer him a lot. Great advice for his career. His uncle said, "Go hire yourself a job. Don't let them turn you down." So Mr. Armstrong did exactly that. He went right into Mr. Miles' office, and he basically said, "I will be fully healthy in 2 weeks, and I will start work with you on that Monday." So Mr. Miles, of course, is a little bit stunned by this. Then he starts to get irritated that Mr. Armstrong would come into his office like this. And here's what Mr. Armstrong says to him. "Mr. Miles, I'm surprised at you. Isn't this a national magazine? Isn't this an institution of national importance?" "Yes, of course," he responded. "Well then, do you mean to tell me that an organization of national scope and influence is not interested in finding a way to create an opening for an ambitious, energetic young man like me? Do you realize that you probably don't get a chance once in several years to add to your staff a man of my caliber, my talents, and ambition and will to work? Why, you can't afford to pass up this opportunity. I'll grow with your organization. Of course you can create an opening. As I said, I'll report for work the first Monday in next month." This experience really did blow Mr. Miles away. He was the advertising manager there at the Merchants Trade Journal. And finally, Mr. Miles gave in. Mr. Armstrong even went so far as to offer an innovative idea for how he could help. He said, "Look, I have all of these wonderful qualities that I can offer to you, and I have a practical way for you to make more money, and I will personally implement this idea." And this idea involved selling ads in the paper and making much more on those pages of ads than they did previously. Mr. Miles gave one last objection here in the story. Well, we can't pay you a very high salary. We couldn't pay you over $10 a week. Who said anything about salary? I rejoined. I still live at home with the folks. I'm not coming up here for the salary I make now, but for what I can learn and the salary I will make later. I'm hired at $10 per week. All I ask is that you agree to raise my salary as fast as I earn it. See you in 2 weeks. Just an incredible story. It's one that we often joke about around here on the headquarters campus, and many people who attend services with the Philadelphia Church of God and have read this autobiography, we always joke about this because it's such an extraordinary story, and it's probably hard for a lot of us to even envision attempting something like this. But definitely a few things that we can apply here, especially if we are in a job search. If we're trying to find a career that really does improve us as people, the first thing I took away from this story, find something you believe in. This doesn't mean following your passion necessarily. Sometimes following your passion can be a real problem. Sometimes following your passion can mean being broke for the rest of your life as you try to write music. If there's not an actual way to implement your passion, it's not worth following at all, at least as a career. So find something you believe in. That means that you believe in the moral purpose, the actual objectives of the place where you're going to work. For example, you wouldn't want to work for a tobacco company probably if you didn't believe in the product being offered, if you didn't think the product was actually worthwhile to the customers. So find something you believe in. Then, number two, know exactly how you can contribute. Mr. Armstrong didn't just go in there and tell his future boss exactly how good of a guy he was. He also said, here's how I can help you. Have a clear outline for the way that you can contribute. Always be asking for more responsibility, looking out for more ways to help in your job. And finally, seems like the third consideration here for Mr. Armstrong in this story was the salary. He wasn't guided by money first and foremost. He cared, first of all, in doing a job that improved his life and improved the lives of the people he was working for. He believed in doing a job that helped all of the people being served, all of the customers. He knew exactly how he could help out. And finally, it was hardly even a consideration for him at all. He thought about how much money he would make. That really is valuable for us. And a lot of the time, like Mr. Armstrong has already explained here, it can be worth turning down a promotion or turning down a raise or turning down what might seem on the surface to be a more lucrative job offer because we're already learning, we're already growing, we're already flourishing in the job we currently have. Mr. Armstrong then goes on here and he talks about some instruction from Mr. Borman. Mr. Borman was in charge of the service department at the Merchant Trade Journal. The first time Mr. Armstrong tried to write a dummy ad and show Mr. Borman, Mr. Borman picked apart every part of it. He basically scrutinized and criticized every detail of the ad that Mr. Armstrong turned in. And then at the end, he said, outside of that, Herbert, that's a pretty good ad. So we're just going to go through here a little bit some of this practical information for how to communicate in an effective way. He says here, regarding the headline of an article or an ad, you have only the fleeting fraction of a second to stop the eye. There's nothing in your headline to arouse instant interest and create immediate suspense. Nothing to make the reader say, well, I never thought of that. I want to read that. Or to say, now I've always wondered about that, so he'll want to read on. Then Mr. Borman said, your major subhead above the text matter is all wrong. You must grab attention, stop the eye in the main headline, but you must go on to arouse interest and create suspense in the subhead if you are to win a reading for your copy. So remember, advertisements, a lot of the time, we just consider them to be annoyances. When the commercial comes on TV, we ignore it or we change the channel. Whenever we come to an ad in a magazine, we flip to the next article without hardly glancing at it at all. This was a tough business for Mr. Armstrong to be in. And he had to learn how to actually make people read through his entire ad, even if that ad was thousands of words long. I actually have a couple of examples here for how Mr. Armstrong applied his early advertising experience. Exactly what Mr. Borman told him here later on in life when he was proclaiming the truth and the gospel message around the world. So again, the title and the subhead, they have to grab interest and arouse suspense. Mr. Armstrong wrote a book called The Incredible Human Potential. Think about that title. The Incredible Human Potential. That applies to every human being. Everyone can be interested in something like that. And immediately when you read that, you just wonder, what is my human potential and what exactly makes it so incredible? Here's the subhead. Here's the supporting information right after the title. This is the eye-opening story of the real gospel message of Jesus Christ, of how this missing dimension was withheld and the whole world deceived. It's positively astounding. It has remained undiscovered by science. No religion has revealed it. Higher education has never taught it. Is it possible the whole world has been deceived regarding the awesome purpose of human life, about the way to world peace and how it will come? And could it be true that the real gospel message Christ brought from heaven revealed this missing dimension but was suppressed? This is the eye-opening story of the real gospel message of Jesus Christ. And it just continues from there, kind of repeats what I already said. But look at that. Look at what he talks about here. How basically this book is the one book you can read to figure out what billions of people around the world have never understood. Science, religion, education has been completely deceived about the incredible human potential. How could you possibly read this and not want to read the rest of the book? Here's one more example that I have. This is from a booklet titled All About Water Baptism. Now, again, this title makes you think, could this booklet really cover everything to do with water baptism? Water baptism, we hear about this all the time from all kinds of different churches. Maybe I need to learn a little bit more. And here's the subhead. Here's the supporting information after the title. Is water baptism essential to salvation? What about the thief on the cross? Was he saved without it? What is the proper form or mode? Sprinkling, pouring, or immersion? Should babies and children be baptized? Suppose you were baptized by a minister you have since lost confidence in. Should you be baptized over again? Suppose you were baptized in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Should you be baptized again in the name of Jesus only? Should one be baptized immediately or only after a 6 months probation? Must the ordinance be performed by an ordained minister? So when you read all of that, you realize, wow, there's probably a lot I don't remember or I've never been taught about water baptism. This seems really interesting. Let me go on and read the rest. So you see how Mr. Armstrong not only applied this advertising advice in the short term, but throughout his entire life, and what an impact it had on God's work. To reach the largest audience possible, God's work can't simply trust that people will consume the truth just because it's the truth. We must make the truth stand out from all other media out there. The truth must be presented in a vivid, stunning, urgent way that can captivate people of all backgrounds and interests. Otherwise, if the truth is just presented in a bland and boring way, people will get the wrong impression. They will think that the truth itself is boring. Really, God's work has a responsibility to present the truth in the highest quality manner that the truth deserves. Mr. Borman continues here, unless this opening sentence follows up the headings, by cementing interest and arousing more curiosity or suspense, no one is going to read past it. Then he continues critiquing Mr. Armstrong's dummy ad here. Now, these smaller subheads, through the text matter, don't add anything. They must create interest, make the reader want to read what's under them. And this text matter will all have to be rewritten. It doesn't hold the interest if you had created interest in the first place. It doesn't arouse desire for this thing you're selling. It doesn't make the reader, if he ever reads this ad, want to buy this product. And then, finally, there's no emotional ending to arouse the reader to action. If you had first stopped his eye and gained his attention, aroused interest, created suspense, made him actually read through your ad, made him want what you advertise. And again, at the end of this, he said, outside of that, Herbert, that's a pretty good ad. Except for that every detail was wrong, apparently. But what valuable, practical knowledge that Mr. Armstrong received on the job. And then right after this, in chapter 3, he says practice makes perfect, and that it took him 2 or 3 years to finally master the art of ad writing. Mr. Armstrong learned about the true psychological principles of writing, and he applied these for the rest of his life. He learned that writing is about winning minds and hearts. You have to appeal to logic and to emotion. And he also talked about how the advertising profession gets it all wrong. That's why advertisements naturally annoy us. Our first instinct when we come across an ad of any kind is just, ugh, this ad is in the way. I'm being forced to come across it. I would rather be looking at anything else. What a disappointment when really an advertisement could serve a great purpose. If it's sincere, if it's a truthful advertisement, it could offer something truly of value to us. But these ads just simply aren't presented in the right way. Mr. Armstrong said the ads I was trained to write during those formative years between ages 20 and 23 always got results. That's what you're looking for when you're communicating any type of a message. You want the audience to go out and do what you're talking about. And Mr. Armstrong learned these tactics when he was in his early 20s. So it doesn't matter how young you are, you can start applying this right now. Mr. Armstrong also learned the importance of a simple vocabulary. He had the wrong goal here. At first, this is what he said, to be able to pour out a torrent of big words, incomprehensible to any but the highly educated, had appealed to intellectual vanity. But at age 20, Mr. Borman changed all that. Mr. Borman showed Mr. Armstrong how the purpose of writing, the purpose of advertising, is to convey a message. You're trying to sell goods, services, or ideas. And what good is your message if 98% of people can't understand it? You can't just be appealing to Harvard graduates in any given form of communication. You won't have a very large reach. You certainly won't get out to the largest audience possible. There's obviously a pretty good example of someone who communicates in a simple manner today. Someone who is often called a moron by the mainstream media. And yet, everyone understands exactly what he's saying. Isn't he getting his message out to millions more people because he speaks in a simple way? Of course, I'm talking about the U.S. president. He knows how to reach the largest audience possible with his own form of a message. You can criticize what you will about him, but look at how effective his communication is. He won an election in 2016 that no one thought he had a chance of winning. And a big part of it was simply communicating so that the everyman, the everyday working class person, could understand everything he was saying. That's what the kind of vocabulary that actually gets results, like Mr. Armstrong said. So Mr. Armstrong's goal here became, instead of that vain one that I just mentioned, developing the ability to use the largest variety of words readily comprehensible by most people when heard or read. He talked about telling a story, not just having the three-point outline form of a presentation, because that gets boring. That may be a safe organizational structure, but it doesn't really break through to the minds and hearts of your audience. Stories are actually the most effective speaking tool. Just think about it. Anytime you're listening to a lecture and you hear the speaker start to tell a story, you get to relax for a moment. You don't have to hurriedly write down or memorize the key points that he's making. You can just sit back, enjoy the story, and then remember the lesson of that story. This is an effective way of communication. And then Mr. Armstrong, of course, goes on to explain how the way that he advertised at a young age affected the entire work for the rest of his life. There is a reason why the World Tomorrow radio and television program was the biggest religious broadcast in the entire world. There's a reason why the Plain Truth magazine reached millions of people, even more than the biggest magazines of the day, like Time and Newsweek. And it's because the truth was presented in an interesting, captivating, motivational manner. It flowed. Like Mr. Armstrong said here, you mix up long sentences with short sentences. You give a change of pace. You have that proper balance. And this is something we can even apply in conversation so that no one loses interest. When we're talking to people, it can be easy for people to get distracted. But if we talk in such a way where we mix up our tone, where we mix up our volume, where we use short sentences followed by long ones, where we tell stories and we build suspense in what we're saying, then how could anyone possibly turn away? Going on here to chapter 4, and this, again, Mr. Armstrong reiterates at the beginning of chapter 4, which is titled Idea Man for a National Magazine, that the whole purpose for writing the autobiography was so that everyone reading it could benefit. Mr. Armstrong lived a long life, numerous experiences in all types of jobs, all types of activities for enjoyment. He learned a lot of hard lessons sometimes. He faced a lot of tough trials. And he wrote it all down so that we could learn from it. And he reflects here at the beginning of chapter 4 on what an abundant life he was blessed with. I'll put in the show notes today this classic article from Mr. Armstrong titled This is the Life, Real Abundant Living. And here's something that Mr. Armstrong talks about. And this is something he knew about from hard personal experience. And we'll get into that in future episodes. He writes here, God perhaps may not add material things early in life. He may not add them right away. It may be some little time, but he will give you all the material goods and necessities that you really need. And even a great many of the luxuries, if your life pleases him. Yes, you can have those things when you know how to possess them and use them. And that entire article is based off of John 10, verse 10. Jesus Christ wants all human beings to live an abundant life, and it all just comes from obedience. If we step out in faith and obey God, that's the type of life we can live. I also had just an interesting tidbit from chapter 4 to talk about. Mr. Armstrong's talking about why, how his liver had trouble at one point. And the doctor told him that he'd been eating too many eggs. So Mr. Armstrong learned he had a torpid liver and that lemon juice seems to be the antidote. He says that if you are feeling sluggish or dopey and drowsy a good deal of the time, It may be because you have the same kind of liver that he did. So try eliminating eggs, corn, and peanuts, and start drinking lemon juice every morning before breakfast. Now, the reason I bring this up is because the pastor general of the Philadelphia Church of God today does this. He drinks lemon juice all the time. He squeezes the lemons himself, and he drinks the lemon juice every morning, every day. And I just thought this was evidence of him applying every detail of the autobiography. Luke 16, verse 10 talks about being faithful in the least so that you can also prove that you're faithful in much. Why do you think Mr. Fleury is such a wonderful leader today? Why do you think that he produces so many great fruits? Perhaps it's because he actually reads the autobiography and applies what it says. That's really a powerful lesson for all of us. Really a great example of following every detail of this book, just like the rest of us should try to do. Mr. Armstrong talks here about looking throughout his life to find physical spiritual parallels. He saw a gigantic stone in Niagara Falls and how the water would go around it, strike that stone head on, and splash over it. Mr. Armstrong compared this to conquering trials, never giving up when times get tough, finding a way over, around, or through any obstacle. And that's just how we can look at every part of our lives. There's examples like that everywhere we turn, where the physical life around us applies to the real, more important spiritual life. Mr. Armstrong also talks about having to conquer sluggishness in the morning. And he even hired a boy who worked at the hotel he was staying at to wake him up, to knock on the door and stay in his room until he was finally awake and fully dressed. Mr. Armstrong had so many opportunities like this where he had to put a prod on himself. He had to drive himself to do what ought to be done instead of giving in to carnal desires, what would come naturally, what would come easily. And finally, here in chapter 5, I just wanted to point out one thing here. He was criticized at one point for the vanity and the conceit of his younger years. Someone read the autobiography and basically chastised and corrected him for being vain early on in his life. Mr. Armstrong talks about here how people criticize God's work all the time. They criticize people who are working hard, trying to serve God, and they don't do anything with their own lives except for complain and criticize other people. They criticize the man in the arena instead of being the man in the arena. And that is true of every critic of God's work. They're angry at what they have not accomplished, and so they turn that wrath on people who are actually getting things done. Reminds me of the old quote, "Winners focus on winning, losers focus on winners." So we've been covering chapters 3 through 5 of the autobiography today. Next week, you can look forward to an interview with Mr. Dennis Leap about volume 13 of the Bible Story. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 11:30 a.m. Central Time.